Hello and welcome to the MB Om podcast, where you will learn to master the business of yoga with guests from around the world who have experienced becoming successful yoga teachers, studio owners, and much more. Now, here's your host, Amanda Kingsmith.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the MB Om podcast. I'm Amanda and I'll be your host for this and all episodes of the show. Has your yoga studio's growth become stagnant? If you're like many studio owners I talk to, you've tried every marketing tactic under the sun. You started a blog, you're posting regularly on all social media sites, running challenges, sending out newsletters, blah, blah, blah. Long story short, you're doing a ton of work and barely paying the bills. What if there was an easier way? A way to get new students regularly coming through your door without having to do so much darn work to get them there? A proven system that will consistently bring in 20 plus new paying students to your studio each and every month. Well, there is. Ron Medlin and his team at GetYogaStudents.com have developed a three-step system that will help you quickly grow your yoga studio to six-figure profits and beyond without being shackled to your business. If you're ready to grow fast and you'd like the blueprint to help you get started, visit www.getyogastudents.com today to get the exact system Ron and his team uses to help his yoga studio clients add 10, 20, or even 30 new students every single month. On top of that, if you head on over to his website, getyogastudents.com, you're able to set up a free 45-minute consulting call. So if you don't believe me that this really works, go check it out for yourself. All right. I am super excited for this week's episode of the podcast. I am rejoined on the show by Jules Mitchell. Now, Jules Mitchell was one of my very, very first podcast guests. I think she was episode number 17. There will be a link for that in the show notes. And we talked all about her career, getting into anatomy, biomechanics, her background of years and years of study in so many different areas, getting her PhD, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I followed Jules since I first heard about her back in 2016, and then it just so happened that this past summer, so the summer of 2018, she came to Golden, British Columbia, which is about an hour and a half from where I'm based in the summers in Canmore, and I really couldn't believe my eyes that she was coming to this tiny little town, kind of right in British Columbia, right by where I live, and so I immediately bought a ticket. I went for the weekend. It was so powerful. It was so amazing. So cool to meet her in person. And we kind of hatched a plan to do another podcast episode together, you know, come fall, winter. And so a couple of months ago, we sat down and we recorded another episode. And this one's really fun because it talks about, you know, the life of a traveling yoga teacher. What is it actually like to be running trainings and workshops all over the world? As well as what's the business side of that look like? And I think that it's something that we don't always get to hear about or something that's really glamorized. And of course, it's a really beautiful career with a lot of benefits. But we also talk about kind of the nitty gritty around that. So hopefully you enjoy this episode. And before we dive into it, we've got our Schedulicity Hot Tip of the Week, all about travel. And this one's with Blake.
Hello, yoga business badasses. This is Blake with the Schedulicity Hot Tip of the Week. Your Schedulicity account can easily follow you and keep you listed in local search results for any place you choose. No matter where you go to teach, it only takes a couple of edits to list your business and teach at a new address. If you connect with a new studio on your travels, you can change your address and pricing information and let your classes and other offerings follow you on your adventures. If you don't have a studio, it's also easy to offer in-home lessons, and when your clients book online, they'll be prompted to enter their address so you always know exactly where you're going. If you regularly work at multiple addresses, we have a convenient add-on for multiple location management. You deserve online scheduling that can keep up with you wherever you may roam.
As always, thank you so much to Schedulicity for being a sponsor of the podcast. And thank you so much to you guys for being interested in them, checking them out. You can head on over to Schedulicity.com to learn more or reach out to their support team at support@Schedulicity.com. And I just think it's amazing because they do so much stuff. Like even being able to change your account as you travel makes it a really good software for a traveling yoga teacher. And this is just another thing that I love about their software. So thank you again for the support. And without further ado, here is Jules. Welcome back to the podcast today, Jules. I'm super, super excited to have you back on the show.
I'm so happy to be here. It's been a while.
Yeah. Yeah. So you were part of season one of my podcast. I think you were like episode like 17 or 20, something really, really early on. I think we talked back in the spring of 2016. And I know having taken a training with you this past early fall, you've had a lot of changes since then. Can you kind of catch me up from, you know, what's kind of been going on in your work life, your travel life, all that good stuff from the time that we talked in spring of 2016?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So almost 3 years ago we talked. Okay, so a lot's happened. I guess at that time I had just started writing my book. I got in contract late December or like September, October, something like that, 2015. So I was just starting my book and I was probably still teaching a lot of group classes living in Los Angeles and still had a private client business. And since then, a lot's changed. The book has gone to print actually this week. So that took 3 years to get done. Anyone who thinks of writing a book is an easy process can don't think so anymore. And then I've moved to Las Vegas and, was in San Francisco for a year and a half before settling here. And so the way that my business looks has just completely changed, partially through the book writing, partially if I'm just having to move so much and relocate. I've totally transitioned completely out of group classes. It's possible that I didn't teach group classes when we spoke, because I think it was like January, either 2015 or 2016 that I stopped, but still. And then I actually, because I've moved so much, I don't have a private client business anymore. So now my biggest kind of income comes from traveling. So I'm on the road all the time teaching and doing online content. And that's kind of where I'm at today.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. And so let's maybe start with your book. So that was something that, you know, you were really excited about the last time we chatted and obviously are probably still really excited about, but what's been kind of the process from getting to like the research, the writing, the editing, and then finally like sending off to print like just this week?
Oh boy. a lot of tears. I'll start with that. It was really an interesting process. The research phase had pretty much already been done because I had done a lot of research for my graduate program. What I didn't expect was that as I started writing, the narrative matured and changed. And so I ended up not using a lot of the research I had and kind of having to go back and get some newer research on different topics. So I deleted more words than I wrote. You know, I'd write an entire chapter and then just scratch it and start over, because I think like writing a book, especially one that's this technical, it's very technical, but still trying to make it relevant. That was the hardest part, like making it relevant to yoga teachers or other fitness professionals, just required that I really narrow my focus and be clear. Like there were a lot of topics that didn't make it in the book because they were great and important, but it would almost be like as I got to chapter 6, which is my last chapter, like I had other things I wanted to say, but then it would have been like starting a whole new book and it wouldn't have had a nice, you know, bow on the outside of the package. And that was the hardest part, I think, is really figuring out what I wanted to say and being willing to let go of important things that didn't fit the story.
Right.
A big challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine that was super difficult. And do you think then there's like going to be kind of a second book, third book, maybe more books down the line?
God.
Or is it too traumatizing at this point?
I actually do have second book in mind that really picks up like there was some topics on flexibility that I just didn't fit the story, so I didn't put them in, and I think I could actually write a whole book on that. I'm just not sure the topic interests me enough to write that book. So I don't think that's not in the cards right now, at least. I do have a meeting with a publisher in a few weeks for a different kind of book idea that's a little bit more practical, less researched, and less of a textbook. And really more just, you know, actually about a resistance stretching. And so I might do something like that, more of a picture book. but we'll see. I think the stuff that didn't make it into this book, I think, is really more appropriate for my live workshops. So, you know, if you come to a workshop of mine, someone asks a question, I can go down like a rabbit hole and talk about some of this stuff and then eloquently pull myself out of it and get back on topic. And so I think that's kind of what's happened, is the things that didn't make it into the book are the things that are reserved for the live workshops. And some things don't really translate into print that well. And so especially a lot of the application. So I think it's okay that it, you know, didn't all get in there, and some of it's just better one-on-one.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And I feel like that was probably a really like hard process, because you know so much about like biomechanics, stretching, like all this stuff. Like, you are just such a wealth of knowledge that I feel like it's probably hard to decipher like what needs to go where and how to build that story arc in a way that people are like, okay, I get it. I understand it. Mm-hmm. It's digestible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And not overload them for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
For sure. I mean, like, even like I have a ton of graphs in the book, you know, and I have to remember, like, some people don't read graphs easily. I happen to have studied a lot of math and physics and engineering. So for me, a graph is clear, but how do I teach them all about what the graph says, while at the same time assuming that they don't know how to read the graph? And so it's like, I'm trying to give an education on how to interpret the graph and how graphs work while I'm talking about what it says. So it's really like, it is technical. One of the women who wrote my foreword, Carrie Orko, we had coffee recently, and she said, some of the sentence, like you sometimes you read a sentence and you don't go on, like you just sit with that sentence for a while, because you have to really like be with it. Cause you know, if you missed what it is, you'll be lost down the road.
Yeah.
So yeah, I hope I made that clear when those sentences were very important.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure you did. And do you have sort of like a timeline? Do you know when it's going to be out for people to purchase?
So now that it's gone to print, it should be out in a few weeks. That was the hardest part, actually, was, you know, I submitted the manuscript in like last weekend of February last year. So almost a year ago. And, you know, the process was really hard, because first it went to a copy editor. And so they did edits and sent it to me, and they didn't do what I liked. So like, here's crazy. I wrote the entire book in she and her. And the copy editor changed it to him or her, or he or she, which is a mouthful and awkward. Mm-hmm. Changed the entire text to that. And then I said, well, I didn't want that. You should have asked me. And so then the copy editor had to go back and reset it. You know, I said, I either want she or they. Like, I didn't want, you know, it just was very, so there's sort of this miscommunication that happens, because the publisher's in the UK, and I think they contract out all of their people. So once we got copy editing settled, then it went to a proofreader, which is different, which I didn't know. And the proofreader had to kind of go through and do other things. And again, we had problems with that, and I'd have to approve everything. And so they'd send me the manuscript, just as I'm boarding a plane for a 3-week trip to Europe to teach. And I'm like, well, when am I going to have time to look through this? So we'd have serious month-long delays all along, simply because I didn't have the screen time to sit down and go through 100,000 words, word by word, to make sure it, you know, had been, the proofreading was up to my standards. And same with the artwork. Like, the artwork, same thing. We probably had 12 iterations of some of the drawings and sketches that are inside the text. So it just took a long time. Now that it's at print, should go fast, because they don't need to rely on me for anything else. So, you know, I think it's coming out to the UK first, because it's a UK publisher, and then it should be in the US by mid-March or something.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, cool. I'm excited for it to be out. I know it's been a long journey, and I can't even imagine, like, the stress of getting something that you're like, well, I want to look at this, but I'm also, like, traveling and teaching. Like, I'm still running my business at the same time as writing this book.
Yeah. And it was really just the screen time. Like, that was pretty, I just like to sit down, and you just really need eight to 10 hours of uninterrupted screen time, because you go in and you get kind of stuck in there. It's like people who design websites get this too. you can't just like sit down and do something for 20 minutes and then leave, because you have to know where you are. Like, you have to get your bearings, right? And so that was really what would happen, is I was like, I'm teaching from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Then I have dinner, and then I'm like catching up on a few emails. When am I going to start this big project? So that was the hardest part, I think, is the lack of screen time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, absolutely. Well, that's amazing. I'm excited to read it once it's out and to see it kind of come to life after all of this time. It's going to be, yeah, I'm sure that it's going to be amazing to hold that in your hands and like see it as a final product.
Mm-hmm. I can't wait.
And so something else you mentioned is that, you know, you've let go of group classes. That's something that I can't remember exactly if you'd done that by the time we chatted last, but I'm curious, like, what that's been sort of like for your business. Like, 'cause I think as a yoga teacher, it's kind of scary to think about letting go of group classes. Like, mm-hmm. what was that kind of like when you did that? And then how has that sort of shifted for you over the last couple of years as you've grown in other directions?
It was a little scary, 'cause that's the business model of teaching yoga, is you teach classes, right? So it was definitely a leap of faith. Luckily, I had a pretty solid private client business. And, you know, I want to say teaching group classes leads to privates, but I really don't know that that's very true. A little bit true, but not very true. I pretty much, my private client business in Los Angeles was a little bit of word of mouth. An occasional student from a group class who had something going on and seemed to think I knew something about their shoulder or whatever and wanted some little one-on-one work. And then a lot of web presence. You know, I had a good website that if you Googled private yoga in Hermosa Beach at that time, I would come up. And so, I think that's really just the way things are going now. So I had that to support me in leaving the group classes. But I will say, like, I do miss it. You know, I teach a lot of group classes when I'm out teaching workshops. You know, we have a class in the morning or something. I teach a lot of classes for online programming. And I go months at a time sometimes without teaching a class because I don't have a normal, like, local group class. And so I feel a little rusty sometimes, I'll be honest. It is a different skill set. And, you know, I think some people are very, very good at it and have really honed their skills. And so I don't want to just jump and say, oh, there's other things out there. You know, it's if you're good at group classes, you know, monetize that, I guess, would be my advice, because there is a way to monetize it, online stuff. You know, it's just I don't know. I'm talking in circles because there's just so many components of the yoga business today that I don't really know what I'm saying.
I think, yeah, I guess what I'm hearing you say is that it's like, there's nothing necessarily wrong with teaching group classes, especially if it's something that you enjoy. And there is so many ways to make money. It's like, you can make money off of group classes. You could build out a private client list. You can teach workshops. You can travel. Like, there's so much different stuff that you can do. And it kind of just depends on what you want to do, I guess.
Yeah. And like, I guess I'm just trying to say that, like, just because I left group classes doesn't mean that teaching group classes is like a lesser aspect of the business, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. You know, there's like, you really have to just kind of figure out what's right for you. And for how my business was, it was just not an efficient use of my time. You know, just getting to class, teaching the class, planning the class, all of that, again, as you heard how low on screen time I am. You know, when I taught private clients out of my home, so I could be sending emails up till 2 minutes before they walked in the door, you know? So it was just, I really had to like figure out what was important, where I needed to direct my time, and group classes was the first thing to go. But I'm not saying that it's lesser.
Yeah. That's the point. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I definitely understand that. I think depending on like what rate you're getting paid, I guess, and not that everything's about money, but I think that that is like kind of a good way to decide things. Like if you're getting $50 for a group session, that means you have to drive. I mean, mm-hmm. driving in California, like probably planning at least 30 or 45 minutes on each side of it, versus having a private that's coming to your house that's maybe paying double mm-hmm. that amount. And then it's also like, I feel like you can also feel like you're making a little bit more of a difference with a one-on-one client in some ways. I guess it sort of depends what you offer, but I feel like it's really cool to be able to have that client who's like, wow, I feel so good. Like I've felt mm-hmm. that what we've done in my body right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was the direction I was going, is, I mean, really more, you know, one-on-one. You might want to call it like yoga therapy, but that's kind of different too. But, you know, it was really just like one-on-one, working with a specific area that was giving them problems. You know, I ended up seeing a lot of people with kind of hip stuff going on and hamstring tendinopathies, and we just, you know, worked together well. But, you know, that's not what all private clients want either. Like, I had plenty of friends in Los Angeles who taught private clients and just taught a vinyasa flow class to the private client, you know, that because that's what the client wanted. So it's like, you just really kind of have to meet the consumer, you know, where they are. Like, what is it that, what can you offer and what are they looking for? There's something for everyone. You know, the people who, here's a great example. I was referred to, a woman with scoliosis was referred to me, and she showed up at my private studio at home. And, you know, when I work with students with scoliosis or clients with scoliosis, it's very deliberate. It's like, you know, let's work with the curve. Obviously I'm not going to change the curve, but let's kind of get you moving into ways that you normally don't because of the curve. Like, let's kind of, you know, reverse the efforts. And if there's any pain or discomfort, let's see if we can kind of alleviate some of that. And so it's very educational. And so this woman walked in, she didn't know anything about me, but someone had told her to come see me. And she walked in with her yoga mat and one of those like yoga towels, like a sweat towel that you put over your mat. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, you're not going to need that. she was like practicing at like power yoga or something in Santa Monica, you know. And I like within 5 minutes, she hated me. I knew it because she just didn't care. She just wanted to work out. You know what I mean? Like, I was trying to show her why we would do triangle differently on this side than that side, you know? So I was like, yeah, we are not suited for each other. Like, because I work with your scoliosis this way, I can't ignore it. And you want to ignore it, and you can, because it's your body. So that was the end of that relationship, yeah. You know, but that happens. It was a good lesson for me, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's like one of those lessons in that you're not going to like be for everyone and you're not going to please everyone. And that's okay. Like, you're not going to just like ignore the things you're seeing in her body in order to like have her as a client.
Yeah. And it's not who I am. So like, yeah, it was good. It was very good.
But yeah,
she would have been a great candidate for someone who has a private teacher and it just gets a flow class. She would have loved that. And it's just not me.
Right. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that either. So,
yep.
When you moved to San Francisco, did you continue with your private client base or did your business kind of shift as well with that move?
That shifted as well. My move to San Francisco was always intended to be temporary. There was just a lot going on in my personal life. You know, nothing bad, but it was just, you know, life gets complicated sometimes. And so I moved in with my sister for a year and a half, and she had an exercise space, like a room that's an exercise room. But she had like a bunch of exercise bikes in there and a bunch of stuff. And like, I was used to my clean, organized yoga space. And so when I brought my stuff there, we had to kind of shoved it in a closet. It just didn't feel very functional to me. And then she also worked in tech. So she was like, you know, she'd get up at 6 a.m. and rush out of the house and leave like a storm of clothes and things behind her. And so it was very like, I felt like if I was going to run a private client business there, I'd be picking up after her every morning. So because people have to come into the house, and I didn't think it'd be good for our relationship, to be honest. I'd be like, you know, moving her yoga space around, her exercise space around for my needs. And then also I just kind of didn't want to put in the marketing for it. It does take some marketing. It does take some work. Like, you know, when my private client business in Hermosa Beach, it was very good near the end, but it took 8 years to cultivate. Like, it was not didn't happen overnight. Right. So I just knew I wasn't going to be there long enough and just kind of wanted to live in peace with my sister. And so I just said, you know, I'll revisit this when I move. And so now I've been in Las Vegas about 4 weeks, and I just finished unpacking my yoga space last week or earlier this weekend. Yeah, this weekend. So I'm ready to see clients now. The funny thing is that since I stopped seeing clients in San Francisco, that was a large chunk of my income. And so I picked up more travel. And so now, and you know, you book travel in advance, obviously, you book these workshops in advance. And so now that I'm here and ready to see clients, I'm not home for the next 10 weeks. So I can't, even if I did get a client, like, I don't know when I'm going to see them. I leave on Saturday and I'm literally home for like one day at a time in between gigs. And then I have to, you know, do laundry, unpack, repack. So, yeah, it's kind of funny how that happened.
Yeah. I think so. I feel like I kind of experienced this in my life, but I feel like yours is like a much like larger scale, better example of it. It's kind of like, I think when you work for yourself, and especially when you have income coming in from different areas, it's like you kind of are always have to be planning for something. So I'm sure, like, and you can tell me if I'm wrong on this, but when you moved, it's like, okay, I don't have the private client income coming in, so now I need to find the income from somewhere else. And then that starts going well, and you're like, oh, well, now I have like the space available for this, but I've built this other element of my business up so much that now I don't have like the time for it.
Absolutely. That's absolutely what happened. I started a teacher training. So I started a 300-hour teacher training. And so now even like, I basically I've got all this travel coming up, and when I come back, I have 2 days, and then I have 20 women from all over the world flying in. I'm housing them and feeding them and doing teacher training. And that's local in Las Vegas, but it's not like I have free time. You know, it's like all day, every day. So, and the teacher training literally was formed out of two things. One, exactly what you said, that I wasn't seeing private clients. And so I had like I had a gap, you know, I had a gap in my time. I had a gap in my income. I was looking at all my travel stuff and I was like, you know, I could actually pull this off. I could run this 300-hour training. And I've done one before in a different format in Los Angeles, but I was like, I think I could do a destination training. And I looked at my calendar and I like saw the dates that I could do it. And I looked into all the places and I picked Las Vegas. It was in Las Vegas last time too, even though I lived in San Francisco. It's just, I know this area. I used to live here. So it's very, I have the resources here. And so I put all that together and that became exactly like you said, out of this gap in one part of my business and then developed this other part. And so now I keep doing that every year because it's been successful. People love it. We've sold out both years. And then the other way it came out was because I was procrastinating on my book. I totally remember, like, I was sitting and I was like, okay, so I can do this. And I was like, well, this is going to take a lot. I had to like build out the whole schedule and build out the website and put up the payment thing. And I was like, okay. And so for like 2 days, I didn't write just out of procrastination and did all of that. So that's good though, I guess.
That's amazing. You're like, build out this new fun program or stare at this manuscript I've seen 100 times.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
So no. Who says procrastination isn't good?
Yeah, exactly. It's just how you use the procrastination.
Exactly.
So I think for a lot of yoga teachers who also love travel, I think that, you know, teaching weekend workshops around the world and teaching these kind of, you know, larger scale trainings, you know, in different destinations is probably something that people are like, wow, that's like my dream. And I think from working and traveling, I kind of know that there's always like another side to it. So I'm curious if you can tell me kind of like what that's been like, pros and cons, that sort of thing.
Yeah. It's rough. I'm not going to lie. It's not at all glamorous. It's difficult. It's hard on your body. And I'm the most unhealthy I've been in a long time. You know, you have no routine. Like, you're never in the same time zone. You have to get up at, you know, you have to get up at 6 a.m. to be at the studio by 8:30 or whatever, but you're five time zones different. So you're getting up at like 1:30, you know, it's very inconsistent. You know, sometimes you're staying in hotels, which are, sound fun, but they're kind of gross and they get old quickly. You know, sometimes you're staying at host houses, so you're staying with a strange family, which is fine and lovely, but also sometimes you just want quiet, you know, after teaching. Your meals are very unpredictable. I used to be a little bit more particular, have a little bit more like dietary restrictions. I have given all of that up. I just eat food if it's served to me. Like, I don't have any, I can't, I don't have the bandwidth for it. You know, it would take too much to control. And so I mean, the pros are obviously getting to see people from all over the world, but I really don't make a vacation out of it. People think I go to all these countries and do all these fun things, but if I were to add on 2 or 3 days of tourism to every weekend gig, I wouldn't have any money left over for, like, you know, rent and life, you know? So I, like people think like, oh, you have all this free time, but hotels are expensive. It's hard to get an inexpensive hotel. And so it's like adding all that on to a work trip and then never having time to come home is just not, it's just not really as feasible as people seem to think. I am going to Dubai in a few weeks, and that is one trip where I am going 2 days early, partially because it's like takes me 30 hours to get there, right? So that's like 30 hours on the plane that I can't work on my business and do things, which is tough, you know. But I was like, all right, and Dubai is kind of interesting to me, so I was like, okay, I'll spend 2 days, you know. And I booked a few walking tours, and I booked the hotel for a couple extra nights, and it cuts right into the little that I actually am making from the workshops, you know. So it's, I just don't usually do it.
Yeah. It's just, I guess, not as luxurious as people think. They're like, oh, you're in like Sweden or Canada or Dubai. Yeah. And it's like, well, I'm like inside a yoga space teaching it. Mm-hmm. And obviously like the teaching is great. Like that's
it's great. Yeah.
You love to do, but it's like, not as glamorous.
I could be anywhere, you know. I could be in any city. It's not where I am. I don't really notice that part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Do you have any like self-care tricks or any kind of like things that you do to kind of prevent burnout with that sort of stuff?
I mean, I the way I pack is part of it. Like I know it sounds crazy, but I'm a Virgo, so I'm very organized. And I have a whole like packing system down that I never change. And as soon as I try to like give myself some sort of logical reason why I should change it, I end up, something doesn't work out. Like I end up saying like, why don't mess with the system, you know? So that makes the travel kind of very easy, because when I need to pack for a trip, I'm packed in 10 minutes. Like it's a system, you know? And so I don't feel like a lot of people who don't travel a lot, you know, start worrying 2 or 3 days before the trip, what they're going to bring, I pack the morning of. I literally get up, shower, throw things in a suitcase and out the door. And so that makes my life feel very calm. I don't feel like I'm like on the road traveling, because everything has its place and has a system. So that sounds like not much like self-care, but for me, it is for my nervous system. Cause that's where for me personally, all the travel is difficult because I don't, you know, everyone is different. For me, it's my nervous system. Like my nervous system gets ramped up from all the lecturing and the talking and the being on the go. And so to anything I can do in my life to kind of quiet that down is beneficial for me. And so I've kind of found little routines and practices about just organizing my life. I never go to the airport late. I always go to the airport hours in advance. Mm-hmm. Because that will mess with me, just the feeling of being rushed. So I have no problem sitting at the airport for 2.5 hours answering emails, knowing that I'm not going to miss the plane, you know?
Oh, yeah. I'm the exact same way, so I feel you on that. I would much rather just hole up at a Starbucks like 5 minutes from my gate and just like do work than sit at home wondering like, is the traffic getting worse? How long's the security line? I don't know.
Yeah, but some people can function like that, no problem, but I can't. You know what I mean? So like I said, for some people, maybe it's the nutritional aspect that's a big deal for them. And so they take great care on what, you know, what they, but for me, it's my nervous system. So I'll eat whatever anywhere because that doesn't throw me off, right? But what throws me off is being like the sense of being rushed or being panicked or just not being in control of like my surroundings. And so that's, you know, I very systematic. I sit in the same seat on every flight, basically. Like I sit on the aisle on a certain side of the plane, a certain number of rows back. Like I have a whole thing because it just makes me feel comfortable. Like, I have no routine anywhere else. So this is how I get my routine, right? And it sounds kind of crazy, but it works for me.
Yeah, no, definitely. I definitely get that as somebody who travels a lot. I think there's just like those little things that you need to kind of do for yourself. that are just important. And then, so, you know, I know we've talked about kind of like, you have a lot of travel booked. It's like you come home, you've got a couple days before you dive into the next thing. Do you give yourself like a day off in between? Or is it like, I've just got to like get on my computer, answer emails, kind of clear out those admin type things before hopping into the next kind of workshop or training?
I don't really take a day off, but when I return, I usually try and fly home after the workshop that evening, which is a benefit of living on the West Coast. You can usually do that. So that my Monday, like if I teach a weekend workshop, so that my Monday at least wake up in my own bed, right? So if sometimes I can't do it because I can't get from a small town, I can't get a flight out. But for the most part, I can leave Sunday evening and I'll end up getting in at like midnight or one or sometimes even two in the morning. And I unpack and I take a shower and I go to bed so that I wake up kind of clean and whatever, even though it's two in the morning, right? Like it doesn't matter. And I go to bed and so my Monday I'm working, but it's kind of my day off. Like I'll lay in bed with my laptop. I'll send everyone the thank you email. I'll drink coffee for like 4 hours in bed. I'll read a little bit, you know, like sometimes I'll even like order groceries. So I don't have to go anywhere. So I have groceries for a couple of days. I'll just order them, you know, with the like Amazon Prime app or whatever. So like it's not really a day off, but it feels very leisurely. And so, and then by mid-afternoon, I'm like ready to go work out. And you know, like, so it's kind of a day off, I guess, sort of. But I'm still focusing on, I'm kind of closing down and doing all the billing and doing all the, because there's paperwork involved, right? So I'm doing all the kind of like, you know, thank you email, sending the evals, sending the certificate request forms, like sending the studio, my expenses, all that kind of stuff happens on Monday. In bed.
It's funny, as like somebody who's also self-employed, I really like days working in bed. It's like so luxurious because I never let myself work in bed just because I'm like, this is my space to sleep. But if I'm having like one of those days like where I'm just like, yeah, it's like I need to do a little bit of stuff, but I don't want to like have a full work day. It's like I'll just bring like a cup of tea or a cup of coffee back to bed and just kind of like do work really relaxed. So,
well, that's kind of one of the things I've done kind of like in my home space, because I have a home office as well, is like, so I don't have a living room. My living room is my office, right? There's no couch in it. There's a huge desk and a rug and pillows on the floor. So I have different ways to work, but my office is my workspace. And then if I take my computer to bed, it's not work, if that makes sense. Like those are my rules, you know, or the other, I'll work at the dining room table. But that's not work either. Like I'll take my computer to the dining room table and I'll like book flights, you know, like I'll like do casual things. Like booking a flight isn't really work, right? So like that's kind of my rule, is I don't really work at my dining room table or in my bed either. I'll do more like, it's kind of just playing on the internet, you know, like doing some little things that need to be done, which to me is also like submitting expenses and just forwarding emails, basically like things like that. But when I'm sitting at my desk or working in my office, then it's like, this is 100% work mode. This is where, you know, the online courses get produced. This is where contracts are negotiated. Like, so I do have some like kind of divisions. There are some lines in the sand for spaces in my house where I work. And that's been very successful for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like that idea, kind of creating that, like, I guess I'm not like a feng shui expert, but having some sort of like, like boundaries that you've created for yourself kind of like energetically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, then absolutely. In terms of like personal practice, I know you do like a lot of working out. Do you have like a personal practice that you kind of take with you on the road or some sort of like routine with that? Or is it kind of like teaching mode and then come home workout mode?
It's usually teaching mode, come home, workout mode. Only because I teach long days, you know. So, you know, usually I teach like 10 to 6 or 9 to 5 or something. And for me, it's more important that I'm not rushed than I wake up at 6 in the morning and go running or something like that. It just, again, we're talking about my nervous system. So like my sister's a runner, right? And I like to run too. Like I run when I'm home. Usually do that on Mondays when I get back. It's because I can kind of clear my mind. But my sister's like a daily runner. And when I travel with her, like she gets up to go running regardless of what we're doing. So if we have like a 6 a.m. fight, she'll still get up and go for a round of three, right? Because it's important to her. And like we were just traveling together this last winter, and we're doing a tour, walking tour at 9 a.m. So for me, because I run a business, like I would rather get a few things handled like online before the day starts so that I can, again, take care of my nervous system and not be distracted, worried, and think I need to get back to somebody on something. And she'll go for her run and she'll come back. I'm not kidding you. 4 minutes before we're supposed to walk out the door of the hotel room. And she will take a 4-minute shower and get dressed. And she can function like that, but I can't. Right. So like, I'm total keeping it cool around her, because I know she's still going to make it on time. She's not going to be late. She's not going to make me late. But I'm like, you know, I'm standing by the door with my coat in my hand, sending one last email on my phone with no big deal. And she's like running around like a crazy woman, like throwing things in a bag, you know? And I'm like out, like sweating everywhere, even though she's got a shower. But she functions that way. And so like, I let her do that, but I would lose my mind. I would not be able to walk into a studio and be organized and calm and collected and be able to, like, you know, organize the content that I want to deliver and answer questions. I just wouldn't be able to do that. So I don't. So yeah, I hotels sometimes have gyms and sometimes I'll go for walks, but I don't make that a priority because I'd rather show up and really deliver an amazing workshop and not show up flustered and confused and rushed, because then that's what affects me the most. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense to me. I'm definitely more on the like side of you than your sister in terms of mm-hmm. organization. Mm-hmm. But I think that's like a good reminder that, you know, we are all different and we do kind of all function differently. And I think sometimes there's this like, well, I mean, there's societal pressure for like a ton of stuff out there. But I think as yoga teachers, it's kind of like, well, if you don't do your self-practice every day, like how are you supposed to teach? But I think it's a reminder of like, you know, if you need to get a little bit more sleep in order to be on your A game to deliver stuff, or you have like your morning routine that's not necessarily like a yoga practice or a workout, mm-hmm. like there's nothing wrong with that as long as you're like,
absolutely not.
Like you just have to tune into what's right for you.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I mean, you know, like, again, it's like my practice, you know, I'm just not one of those like devout practitioners who follow the lineage, right? So like, you know, sometimes in the morning I'm feeling a little stiff, I'll knock out 10 push-ups, and you know what I mean, like feel good, like, you know. So it's like I just the practice to me is all of it, is, you know, what do you need to do? It doesn't always have to look like, you know, a set sequence or series, and I don't just, you know, I think that's great that people have that, but that just puts more pressure on me. So I'd rather just take care of my nervous system, whatever that looks like. And sometimes it involves exercise before a workshop or after, and sometimes it doesn't. If I can go for a walk, that's usually what'll happen. And that's my best way of seeing a new city. And, you know, I'm like, oh, I can just walk around for half an hour and get a coffee, and that works too. And that is my practice, I guess. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm definitely like in a similar camp. Like I don't practice like Mysore or anything specific in the morning. So, it's nice to hear that there's like other people who kind of do the same thing, and that I think it is kind of like, especially when you're a newer yoga teacher, you kind of feel like, oh, I need to be doing like these certain things in order to be like a proper yoga teacher. And I think it's just, I don't really like believe in that. So I think it's just nice to hear about like what somebody else's rituals are and what's important to you when you're out and traveling and teaching and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I agree. And I also will say I don't practice yoga in airports, and I don't practice yoga on airplanes, even though I see that all the time. But I think that's something that we in the yoga world could really like look at, because it's a little bit weird. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's a little bit entitled. Imagine if everybody did yoga in the airport, you know, like it's just a strange thing to like go up into the plane and then go do yoga in the flight attendant's workspace. It's very much a product of what you said, of this, like, oh, you have to do your practice every day. You know, if you missed your primary series because you had an early flight, well, why not do it on the plane? It has to get done. You know, like that, I think that's actually very rigid and not very flexible, and really not what yoga is about. You know, like that actually makes you a little bit more kind of incapable of going with the flow, I guess. And so that's one thing that I've had to really do in the last few years, is just deal with what's coming and not care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm always sort of like, I feel like I wouldn't practice yoga, like definitely not on an airplane, because I feel like I'd end up like falling over and like bashing a flight attendant over the head, which is totally inappropriate. But also in airports, I'm just like, I don't really want like people staring at me while I do this. Like, I feel like my yoga practice is the type of thing that I'd rather be like in a little private cubby in my house instead of in a big public place. And I think people should do whatever like floats their boat. But yeah, I'm definitely in the same camp too. Like, I would rather get up and get to the airport early and just like chill out and maybe have like a, like just practicing patience with like the TSA, I feel like is like my practice at the airport.
Oh, absolutely. Practicing patience with everybody, you know, it's difficult. Yeah.
Like the people who don't travel, don't like have a water bottle, their cell phone, laptops in their bag, their shoes are still on.
Totally. Oh, for sure. Practicing patience with that, for sure. Some of those airports have yoga rooms. Like, I know SFO does. And of course, like, I'm not saying like, you know, you can't like, you know, do what you need to do. And, you know, while you're waiting for flights, for sure, stretch and do whatever. But I'm talking about, I've seen like legit people roll out mats and like do a whole practice. It's just a little crazy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with that. Something else I'm curious, kind of like on the business side of, I guess just the business side of yoga and working for yourself is kind of the money side of things. Mm-hmm. Have you ever struggled with sort of like the blend of, I guess, like the spirituality side with yoga, like charging for your classes or for your privates or for your workshops?
I don't have a dilemma around that personally. The industry has a problem with that overall. This is, you know, I feel like my voice just changed. It was a serious tone. But it is something that is really problematic, I think. It's just because I've worked with so many studios, and I see that they are struggling to make money. And so this is where we run into the challenge. I need to make money, otherwise it's not worth me flying all the way out there. And, you know, and remember, I'm traveling one day on either end that I'm not getting paid for. I'm only getting paid for teaching. So a lot of my time is just wasted time that I'm not getting paid for. And I can't do other work because airplanes aren't really great for Wi-Fi, you know? But the studio doesn't want to charge a lot for my workshop, because the teachers aren't making any money that would take the workshop. So like, nobody is making actual money. Does that make sense? Like I need to cover my expenses, which are huge. And I mean, travel and hotel is not cheap, right? So I need to cover my expenses and still make some money. But I need the teachers need to be able to afford it. And the studio needs to make money to host me because they're canceling classes and all of these things. And so I feel there's this constant narrative around, let's make it cheaper. And then it becomes like, well, why are we even doing this? Like, you know, like at what point is it not worth it? At what point are we all just like, you know, we kind of like pushing money around, but nobody's actually getting anything out of it. And I firmly see like the big companies, like the Mandukas and the Lululemons and the Aloe Yogas, they're making money. But as far as like those of us out in the trenches, trying to do some education and teach our communities, we're all struggling. And I don't know how to be the one to change that narrative, how to be the one to say, all of us need to make more money. And then that means we need to spend more money on, you know, on programming and workshops and education and things like that. But I don't know how to make the change.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think that that's, you know, entering into the yoga industry from like corporate world, it was one of the things that really surprised me, because I never felt like as a practitioner. Like, I never felt like yoga was expensive because I was also doing things like spin classes and boot camps and going to the gym. And, you know, yoga is actually kind of like on the more affordable side in general with that type of stuff. Yeah. So I never felt like yoga was like too expensive, which seems to be what a lot of people, like, they're like, oh, it's too expensive, I can't afford it. And then people lower the prices with it instead of being like, too bad, so sad. And then teachers get paid less. And then studios don't make enough money. And it's kind of like, where does the circle start and where does it end? Like, what do we do about it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then there's the free community classes or the discounted community classes from the new teachers out of teacher training. It just drives the prices down more and more and more. And yeah, it's just, it's so interesting that, like, I'll go take like a continuing education course, like, you know, from like a physiotherapist or something, right? And I'll pay thousands of dollars for this course. And the same amount of hours for a workshop in the yoga world is like, you know, a quarter of that. And then, like, I'll show up and I'll be like, well, I didn't print handouts. They'll be like, well, I really like handouts. I'm like, but like, that costs money. I go to this one course and I get a spiral bound, you know, notebook because I paid for it. It's in the price of the course, so it's very interesting, like the expectations that we have versus what we're getting. And I just don't know, like you said, where the circle starts and where it ends. Like, somebody's got to step up and be like, this is where we should be at. And that means it should trickle down across the whole spectrum. Teachers should be making more money. Yoga teachers should be making more money, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And so should studios. Like, I am not saying it's the yoga studio's fault. Yoga studios should make more money. Like, everybody should be making more money for the industry that we're in. If, like you said, if we're comparing it to fitness and spin and all these things, like, we have an issue. We have this guilt feeling maybe with money. I don't know what it is, but it's an industry problem. It's not just, you know, me personally, it's across the board.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of interesting just thinking about, like, you know, using like spin or CrossFit, for example. Like, I think spin and CrossFit are, you know, like, you pay, depending on where you are, I would say between like $20 and $25 for a class and like use of the equipment with that type of stuff. And I think yoga in a lot of places is kind of starting to become on par with that. But I would say like yoga is generally more like maybe $15 to $20. So it's a little bit behind. And I feel like nobody goes to like a CrossFit studio and is like, hey, I can't afford this. Like, do you have any free classes with this? Yet it's like so common in yoga. I don't know. Like, is it the spiritual side of things? Is that we feel like we should be offering it for free because we love it so much? Like, I just don't really know what the mindset around it is. But I know that, like, it's so easy to get sucked into it. Like, when I started teaching, I was like, okay, well, the only opportunities for me are to teach free classes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I don't know. I mean, there is this whole other like underlying, like, yoga should be accessible to everybody. And I totally agree with that. But in order to make yoga accessible to people, we need to be taken care of somewhere else, if that makes sense. So, like, here, for example, I'm actually presenting at the Accessible Yoga Conference in June in St. Louis. And that is a pro bono gig for me. You know what I mean? Like, I want to make yoga accessible for people. Therefore, I'm doing this pro bono gig. But I'm fortunate enough that I'm being taken care of on the other side of my business. Where the problem lies is that we're expecting new teachers and teachers who don't have any other sort of source of income, them to do the pro bono work, right? Like, there's nothing wrong with making yoga accessible for marginalized populations, including those that can't afford it, right? Absolutely. But, you know, we can only give if we're being taken care of. And so I think that's kind of that people maybe don't want to say that. And I think that's what we need to keep that in mind. Everybody needs to. It's fine for a studio to have a community class. Absolutely. And have a, you know, free class in the park or whatever. But the studio still needs to be able to pay their bills in order to offer that. Mm-hmm. And so somebody has to be paying for it somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely is a complicated issue. And there's so many sides to it too. I feel like it's not just like black and white. And I think there's just like so many opinions in it as well. And I guess just like, I feel like I want to be a part of the like wave of yoga teachers making more money. And it sounds like you do too, as well. Like, it's, making a shift. And I think it does start with just having, you know, conversations like this where it's talking about like, you know, what can we be doing and how can we be charging? And I think it is a little bit complicated because then, you know, and maybe you can let me know if you've experienced this, but it's like you go to charge something for your workshop and the studio is like, well, nobody's going to like pay this much. Like they can't afford it. And then it's like, well, I can't afford to like do
it.
Do it
for less.
Yeah. And it's like,
that's what happens. No, really, that happens to me almost every contract negotiation. That's what we talk about. And I'm like understanding, you know, like I know you need to make money too. So like, I don't know, like this, something has to change. But I think part of it also is like our, like the mindset has to change. And that is like the collective community has to start seeing things different. So like one of the things I talk about with a lot of studio owners is why don't you adopt the Pilates schedule? Like at a Pilates studio. So in yoga, we have usually like at a yoga studio, we have like a 6 a.m. class or 7 a.m. class. There's like a 9 to 10:30. And if you're lucky, there's a lunch power hour or something, right? And then like there's no yoga all afternoon. And then there's like a 5 p.m. and a 7 p.m. or whatever, right? You know what I'm saying? Like there's like these times that you can expect to go to yoga, but you can't expect to go to yoga at 1 o'clock. It's really rare, right? And if you go to a Pilates studio, they have a class for they're like 55 minutes, right? And they're like, so they have a class at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. And the Pilates teacher has just taught 5 or 6 classes and is off for the rest of the day. And then and then there's a little break, and then a different teacher comes in and they teach a class at 1:30, 2:30, 3:30, 4:30, 5:30, 6:30, 7:30. They teach right through. And so they actually like ask a yoga teacher how many classes a day they teach, and they usually teach 2 or 3 and they're driving all over town. Right? So like the system doesn't work. That needs to change. And I've talked about this with studio owners, and I tell the studio, and they're like, well, we don't think anyone will come because we've conditioned people that yoga is not only 1 hour because that's inappropriate. That's not enough. Yoga is 1 hour, 15 minutes or 1.5 hours. And we have to have 15 minutes in between classes instead of 5 because everyone needs time to roll up their mat. And even though the Pilates studio can spray down the reformer and have new people in 5 minutes, you know, like it's just because we've always done it that way doesn't mean we should continue to do it that way. And people are scared to make the change. And I think that would be huge for yoga teachers if they could show up at one studio and teach 5 classes back to back with maybe like a small 15-30 minute break in between, you know, so they can have a snack or whatever, like between like, you know, 2 or 3 classes and a break and then 2 or 3 classes. But imagine how much better that would be for not just the studio offering more classes, not having wasted space that's not being used, for the teacher to make more money by teaching more classes, and for the consumer, ultimately the yoga, they have more choices. Do you know how many times I show up in a new city and I maybe for some reason I don't start till noon that day because, you know, I'm working with the studio schedule and I'd like to go take a class somewhere, but like there's not that many to choose from, right? Like I'm like, well, those studio only has 1 class in the time frame that I could go, and it actually ends a little bit too late, so I can't go. I think it would be amazing if we could really kind of change the model, maybe. And spin and CrossFit, I've never done CrossFit. I'm assuming it's the same. Like, you know, there's this constant turnover of opportunities to practice.
Yeah, I don't know. That's really interesting. As you were talking about that, I feel like my first like thought was like, but does anybody go to yoga at like 2:30 in the afternoon?
But they might. I would.
Yeah, it is totally. I was actually thinking as you were talking about that, I actually find that when I travel, I usually just end up going to a gym because I can go whenever I'm free.
Whenever you want. Exactly. And I used to take a lot of Pilates when I lived in Los Angeles. And literally, I could go anytime, like anytime. And so I would. I could look at my schedule and be like, oh, I prefer to practice or whatever at 10 in the morning. Let's just say that's my ideal time. Oh, but look, I scheduled a podcast that starts at 11 that day. So, okay, that means I won't make it back in time, but I'll be done with the podcast by 12:30. So I can go to a 1 o'clock. You know what I mean? Like that, like to have those options. And I actually started attending more Pilates classes than yoga classes for that reason when I lived in Los Angeles, because I was like, wow, I can actually go any time of day like, it, you know what I mean? Like yoga actually, I teach yoga and the studios, because of their format, were actually like, I wasn't able to make it work, you know?
Yeah, so yeah, definitely.
It's just, I think it would be great for yoga studios to pick that up. But I think the studios are scared because now they're, what if they have five classes in the morning and no one's coming? Now they still have to pay the teacher. So I understand, like, I understand all of the problems, but needs to be bold and say, I'm going to change the way that we look at these things, you know, and then see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that concept kind of like plays into a lot of things that I think we've talked about as sort of issues. It's like, as teachers, you don't teach very many classes and you're running around all over the place, which means it's a lot of your time, it's energy, it's gas prices, it's eating on the go, which is all really expensive. Like if you teach three classes in a day at three different studios, you're easily spending as much money just in gas and food.
And it's your whole day. It's your whole day. You can't do anything else.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, like, it's really hard. Like, you definitely can't, like, you know, you definitely can't sit down and create some content for an online or update your website or all those things. Cause you're not even like, you know, like the things that a business requires are not, you can't do. And then try to fit your own practice in as well. And that's your whole day. It really is.
Yeah, no, totally. And then it's like, you kind of look at, like, say you get $50 a class, that's $150 in a day. And I guess my mindset goes towards like, well, what if I just created an online course and put that in there and then spent some time to like do some marketing? Like I could probably make $150 in like 10 minutes.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, really, like, it, you know, I mean, that's where I think that's where the kind of struggle is. And I'm not saying we should all be doing only online stuff, because I think there's a huge value in, you know, your community and actually teaching, but the system doesn't support the teachers. And I think that, or the studios, you know, and I think that, or even the consumer, because again, the consumer only has certain options. And so I just, yeah, I think if we really kind of all just really looked at that and were willing to make some small changes here and there, I think we could actually change it. I do.
Yeah. Just,
someone has to, and I don't have a studio, so I can't, you know, like I can only sit here and tell people what I think, you know, I mean, I could be totally wrong because I don't have a studio. So it's just something I see, you know, that's all.
Yeah. Studio owners listening, let us know your thoughts on this. Yeah. Looking for some people to test it out.
Yeah. Someone tried it and what was their experience, you know, like, and what's the market like? Yeah. Just lots of questions.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes me think about, I feel like, you know, kind of my approach to this as I've thought about this over the last little while has been like definitely more on the mindset side, but this has kind of intrigued me towards like, maybe it's more about the model. Maybe the model is not necessarily working.
That's what I think, to honestly, because we are a unique model. It's a unique model. And so I don't see it in any other, across the board in any other industries with this weird times of classes. So it'd be,
Yeah, definitely interesting. Amazing. Is there anything else you want to share today, kind of about yoga business, yoga industry, teaching and traveling, teaching online, anything like that?
Gosh, I feel like I've shared a lot. This was a rich conversation. No, I guess I just want to say, like, I love yoga. I think yoga is like, it's so special to me. It's like, you know, it was my first love of like movement and self inquiry and getting to know myself. And I think, early on in my career, I kind of got a little bit jaded and a little bit like, you know, had all these things and that's the worst thing that can happen. So, you know, I've really made it a point, even though we've, you know, done a lot of kind of industry bashing on this call, that we're just speaking frankly, but I've really made it a point to remember like what yoga is for me and what yoga is for people and like to like hold it up in a really special light, you know, instead of just constantly bringing it down, which is kind of what we just did, but not really, you know, cause we, at the end of the day, it comes from a place of like, we want this industry to thrive and serve the community. And so we just have to figure out what that's going to be like.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. And I think I think that, I mean, I don't think we would honestly like have had, you know, this deep conversation if neither of us were passionate about the yoga industry. Like, I think it comes from being like, we want people to practice yoga and we want yoga teachers to keep teaching yoga and we want to be able to keep teaching yoga. Therefore, it needs to all kind of need to work together. Yes. And there's some like things that just feel like they're not necessarily working well. And I don't think it like benefits yoga to have yoga teachers come out of teacher trainings and be like, well, what the hell? Like, I'm poor. Like, I hate mm-hmm. this.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't benefit us to say, it's all going to be fine. It's all good. You know, because we're also, yoga people are really good at saying that too. So, so it's okay to have like an honest conversation, still hold up yoga and not bash it, you know, but still have an honest conversation because it isn't all good. You know, like, what can we do to make it better? How can we be responsible?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. And yeah, thank you for having this conversation with me. This has been really awesome. It's definitely got my wheels turning in my brain around kind of the business side of Great. Things. If people want to check out any of your online offerings, maybe look and see if you're teaching a workshop near them, where can they go to find you online?
My website, just julesmitchell.com, is pretty much where everything is. You can find out my workshop schedule there. You can send me an email if you need to. You can find out all my online actual practice classes. You can see my online education courses. It's all there. Even about my book, it's all in one spot. Easy.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Jules.
Thank you.
All right, guys, I hope that you enjoyed that episode of the podcast with Jules Mitchell. I just find her so inspiring and authentic and down to earth, and I'm so grateful that I was able to connect with her. She is actually going to be back in Golden, BC this summer. She's going to be there from July 12th to 14th with Charlie Reed, who is a personal trainer. He is actually going to be on the podcast in a couple of weeks, so look out for that episode. But if you're in the Alberta, BC area, I would definitely recommend checking out this workshop. I'm going to be there. It's going to be awesome. And if you want to learn more, it's going to be goldenlotusyogastudio.com. And I'll make sure there's a link for that in the show notes. So you can find that over on the website at www.mbomyoga.com. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Mastering the Business of Yoga. And of course, you can join the private Facebook community at Yoga Business Badasses. We still have a few spots left in our Costa Rica Yoga Teacher and Wellness Professionals Retreat that's coming up in November. So that's November 2nd through 9th. If you feel like spending a week in sunny Costa Rica, hanging out with a bunch of like-minded people, doing yoga, talking business, learning new things, relaxing, rejuvenating, this might be something that interests you. So you can find out more at mbomyoga.com/retreats, or you can send me an email at info@mbomyoga.com, and I can send you all of the information about what we're going to be doing, what the week is going to look like, and much more. I always love to hear from you guys, so definitely feel free to reach out. As always, thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next week. Namaste.